how to create content that grows your brand and your business.
So we're going to talk some more about the content creation topic because that's what we've gotten a lot of questions about. And it's actually something that we have spent quite a lot of time playing with in the last year or so. The experimentations that we've done with content creation have led to, well, basically we've tested this in different niches. And some of the things we've achieved in that time is in a new niche, we went from 0 to 100,000 followers in about 2 months, and something under 2 months, actually.
Yeah.
And we also used organic content in a brand new niche to get from 0 to over 3,000 community members just through content. And you also did a content creation experiment which was like the strong finisher thing. So can you tell us a bit about that?
The idea behind it was to figure out, okay, how do I create content that gets views and traction, right? And just a little bit of context, I have zero content creation experience or skills, absolutely nothing. And I tested that in two different niches and two different platforms just to see what works. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you don't have to go through the same bullshit that I did. It was so hard. Moving on from that, we also did one.
Yeah, although it's also worth mentioning. So yeah, it was basically your first attempt at doing content in new niches. And in basically four rounds of content creation, you got to the point where it's like, okay, you had the formula down as this is how I get views, right?
Yeah, so pretty much what I did, I was inspired by your practice, right? The thing you mentioned. Well, I mean, I'm sure we're going to dive into it. But I saw you do it live. Mm-hmm. In like 5 weeks, this thing is blown up. I'm like, holy shit. Mm-hmm. And it's not like you were the ultimate authority in the niche that you started talking and everyone started paying attention, right? Like mm-hmm. you went from scratch and just made it happen. And I was like, what? I didn't know that was possible, right? So I wanted to replicate that. I'm like, okay, well, how could I do this myself? And I'm like, okay. I pretty much had one conversation with you where you were like, oh, work in like whatever, 3 to 4 rounds and mm-hmm. do 10 videos at a time. And I was mm-hmm. like, okay, fine, I'll go do it. And I did it. Yeah. And yeah, it eventually worked.
And it was good to see that again, like without, because obviously I have a background in making content. I've been doing it forever, but it was good to see that it's also transferable. We also had, there's another brand that we kind of started, again, mostly as an experiment that we called Smoothie Crush, where it took us about 10 videos to get the first one that got like 500K views and like 5K followers, something like that. So, and that was also just like to see, does this same formula keep working if we apply it in different places? Dean has also been making video content, and it didn't take that many videos before the first one got like a few thousand views. And again, it's like the same principles. We just see it over and over again. The same principles keep working. And also, you know, this is a while ago. It's been a long time, but for Thrive Themes, when I did the marketing there, it was also very straightforward content marketing, where basically the approach is very, very simple. It's like every time we released something, every time we had a new feature, new whatever, there'd be a content piece. There'd be a content piece that essentially explains something. It was tutorial content that explains something that people in the niche are interested in. You know, build a landing page for XYZ. And it just happens to show how to do it with Thrive Themes tools. And it just created a constant stream of people discovering Thrive Themes and becoming customers, right? And so this is kind of the background of the work that we've done in content marketing. But also recently we've noticed that a lot of people have been asking us about content creation. And we have seen that I think that people are leaning more towards content creation, or especially video content is becoming a thing. So you were recently telling me about how you've noticed that quite even like high level entrepreneurs are doubling down on content, right?
They're all focused on the specific thing within their niche or that specific topic that they want authority on, right?
Right.
And it's going from, I'm seeing it within like solopreneurs to like people with large teams that want to pretty much to establish themselves as authority, right?
Yeah.
Imagine hopping on a sales call and your prospect has already watched like 10 videos of yours, knows what you do well, what you don't do well. Right?
Yeah. 100%. I mean, it does so much work for you. And authority, I think, is the key word. Like if people see videos of you, and especially videos, because then like they're really connecting with that person, that creates so much authority. And I've also noticed that where I almost feel like people take me too seriously when they've seen me on video. It's like, oh, you're the guy. It's like, anyone can do that. Do you know that you can just upload videos to YouTube? Like, nobody's stopping you, you know? But it's almost like you get so much authority from that. I also think it's probably because of Alex Hormozi. Because he was talking about, I mean, he's probably the strongest voice in marketing right now. And he was talking about the reason he started creating like a personal brand is because he saw this as like the highest leverage thing to do. And he saw it with other people, right? Where it's like, in a way, he was trying to figure out this entrepreneur thing. He was trying to get more and more leverage on his business. And he just saw that people who had a strong personal brand were like running circles around him. And so he was like, okay, this is what I'm missing. Yeah.
And he's like the notorious for being the ultimate tech savvy guy, right? Like, he's the full out cold Facebook ads converter and all that. Like, yeah. He's like, oh, I close anybody on sales. Right. And even he came to the conclusion that the audience itself is the ultimate compounding asset.
Yeah.
So growing the audience and nurturing and serving them is the key.
Yeah. So all this brings us to, let's talk a bit more about content creation, how we do it, how we make this work repeatedly. And I think, so first of all, there's a framework we've talked about before on this podcast, which 100% applies to content creation, which is that in order to succeed with content marketing, what you do has to be strategic, sufficient, and consistent, right? We call this very non-creatively, we call this the SSC model, right? Strategic, sufficient, consistent. As you can see, we're not branding experts, but we are pretty good at making content.
Never promise branding. Yeah. This is about content.
Yeah. So strategic, sufficient, consistent. Those are basically the three components. Whenever someone is struggling with this, whenever someone's not making it happen, it's always because one of those is missing.
Yeah.
Now, let's break down, like, in this episode, we're going to talk about the three biggest obstacles, the three problems that keep people stuck. And actually, the first one we've covered in the last episode. Because the first problem is that people never make enough content and don't make it consistently. So you're not making, and those, obviously, you have to make enough content first.
Yeah.
In order to then be able to make it consistently, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You have to cross that chasm of where you're just dealing with the fear and the mental thing of like, oh my God, I suck so much. At some point, you stop thinking about it and you're like, huh, how could I improve this?
Yeah. And also, especially with content and anything entrepreneurial, really, there is always a certain randomness and luck component where, you know, even with our most successful content brands, what will happen is that, you know, if we publish 20 videos, there'll be like 10 that don't do great. There'll be like 5 that do well. There'll be 4 that do great, and there's 1 that just goes viral, right?
Right.
And it's like, if you don't publish 20 at least, there's a good chance that your content is good enough to go viral, but because you only published 10 videos, it just never happened for pure randomness, right? So there's nothing wrong with your content. There's nothing wrong with what you talk about, how you talk about it. There's nothing wrong. You just didn't do enough, right? And again, like, the only way I know that I can consistently make content that goes viral is because I've made hundreds of videos, and I can be like, yeah, okay, like 5% of the time or so it goes viral, right? So that is a big part of you have to do enough. You have to do enough to even give yourself enough data to see, do people respond to this, or is it just like randomly not working yet?
Right.
And then obviously, yeah, you have to do it consistently. Now, we covered this problem in the previous episode. So if you haven't listened to that episode yet, make sure you listen to it before, where we basically talk about how to overcome that fear that most people have of publishing and get to the point where you're doing it consistently and sufficiently. And we talk about the 80% rule, which is the best way to create content fast and get better at creating content faster. That's all in the last episode. So that would be the first problem. A lot of people get stuck there where it's just like, look, and if you're stuck there, nothing else matters. Like, until you start making enough content and you start making it consistently, none of the other stuff matters. But assuming that you get to the point where, okay, now I'm really making content, I'm not just standing in my own way anymore, the next problem is a lack of strategy. So here, you have to, what does that mean, right? You need to make content strategically to give yourself a better chance of actually succeeding. And you need, there's a couple of components to this. One is that initially your content won't be very good. That's just how it is, right? That the first video you make is probably not going to be great. And you need a strategy to shorten the learning curve, because it's possible. And here is, I think the problem here that you might run into is that you start making, you almost start brute forcing, you just make content without a clear strategy of how do I decide what content to make and how do I improve my content. This is what I did, you know, 10 years ago or whatever, longer than that, when I started making content. This is basically what I did. And to be honest, you still get better, but the amount of improvement I achieved in my first like 50 to 100 videos was not great, because I just didn't have a strategy for how do I actually improve, right?
Right, it was just brute force, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So look, my 100th video was still better than my first one, but not that much better. And with the amount of improvement I made in 100 videos with people I've worked with, you can make that amount of improvement in like 3 to 5 videos, to be honest, right? If you have the right approach. So you got to avoid making content without a system or without a deliberate approach to how am I going to improve. And without also, I call this like shouting into the void, right? If you go, okay, I'm going to start making content about topic X, and you just make content without a system of figuring out what do people actually want to hear? Like what are people interested in? What are keywords people are searching for? Like without a system or a strategy for how do I decide what to make content about, you can be making all kinds of content that just doesn't land. Mm. And this is like shouting into the void, right? It's like just you're throwing content pieces out there just hoping that something sticks. And the lack of strategy can, again, look, eventually it's probably still going to work, right? But it's just you're lengthening that learning curve really unnecessarily by not having a strategy. And I think that maybe there's a problem here that maybe has gotten worse now because everybody has ChatGPT, which is that the worst kind of content you can make is generic content, right? And if you go to ChatGPT and say, hey, give me some content ideas, even if you go, give me creative, interesting content ideas, you generally get generic stuff, obviously, right? Because it's taking all of the content it's been trained on and giving you kind of a median of that, right?
Right.
And also, if you ask it to write a script for you, it will always be like a really lukewarm, mediocre script. I've really never seen an AI-generated script that doesn't read like it's AI-generated. And this is the worst kind of content you can make, is content that's essentially replaceable, that doesn't have a unique voice, doesn't have a unique angle. And again, if you don't have a strategy for how do I position myself here, what is my voice in this content, how do I make this stand out, you can be churning content for a long time without really...
Yeah.
Achieving much.
It is true that right now there are people who are exploiting this loophole of, you know, ChatGPT generated scripts and getting AI to generate videos and then uploading them on YouTube, right? But it's no different than the guy who runs after the SEO hack until Google fixes its algorithm and they're like, oh my God, my business is dead, you know?
Yeah.
Who do you want to be? If you want to be the person who's jumping from loophole to loophole, then, well, you're probably not listening to this right now.
Yeah.
Right? But if you want to be like a bad motherfucker, like that's what we're talking about.
Yeah. And also the authority thing, right, is like, this is the kind of content I want to definitely focus on, that because I do think there's probably ways in which to succeed with like generic AI created content, whatever. But the problem is it has no moat, right? If you can ask the various AI tools to churn out this stuff for you, someone else can do it too. So there's nothing defensible there. Whereas the personal brand is where you immediately, if you actually make it personal, then it's immediately unique because there's only one of you, right? Hmm. So it gives you a huge advantage. And yeah, I think that's worth mentioning. The kind of content we're talking about here is... It is about personal brand content, essentially.
Right.
Let me give you one, the simplest strategy that we can, you know, nutshell in this episode as a starting point. Because, okay, I've talked about why you need the strategy, but let's talk about what is the strategy? How do you do it? Here's the simplest thing. I've used this over and over again. It goes like this. You figure out what is popular in your niche, and then you figure out how do you position yourself relatively to what is popular in your niche. And, okay, there's basically two simple positions you can take. Is you can either be a contrarian or you can be a fan.
Hmm.
Okay. And with several of my brands, including like Active Growth and including Thrive Themes, and including crit by healing. My position is, I'm a contrarian in real life, right? So for me, it's easier to take the contrarian position, to essentially look at what is the popular thing? What is everybody doing? What is the mainstream advice? And then my positioning is, as a contrarian, here's why that's wrong and what you should be doing instead, right? But I'm automatically talking about things that are already popular, that people already care about. And I'm taking a position of, you should be listening to me instead of them because reasons. So for example, with Thrive Themes, look, Thrive Themes had a very simple, like, contrarian premise at the heart of the brand, which was all this other WordPress software is made to make, like, nice looking websites, brochure websites. But what matters is conversion. Are you turning your visitors into sales? And if you want WordPress themes and plugins that help you do that, come to us. If you want a nice looking, look at the fancy animations website that nobody will ever buy anything from, go to everyone else, right? And that is the contrarian position. And obviously I'm kind of exaggerating.
Right.
And I've also, you know, people who've been following me have probably heard me talk about this. I talk about poisoning the well, right? Where you go, you try to create a frame where you say, look, the thing that everybody else is talking about is a mistake, right? You try to poison the well of, you literally try to position yourself as, this is ruining you, come to me. So this is why I'm deliberately exaggerating and saying, all the other themes, all the other providers are giving you a website that will never convert, right? Like, that's obviously an exaggeration, right? But that's the picture I'm trying to paint, right? So that my contrarian position is, seems like the one you need to pay attention to.
Right.
And okay. And that's the basic idea, where I have a sense of what is everybody else talking about. Like, again, going back here, but you know, one of my most popular content pieces at the time was why we don't have a sliders feature. Because for a long time, that was every WordPress theme you could find. You go and look at the demo, and the top of the page is a huge slider, like an animated slider, right? With animated images and animated text and so on. And obviously that looks cool, right?
Yeah.
And then, you know, sometimes like 3D transitions and all this kind of stuff. But there was plenty of research that shows consistently when you measure conversions, everything outperforms a slider, right? Like, everything works better than a slider, basically. And so this is the position we took, is like, we don't have a slider feature. Like, what? Literally bad for your website. Don't do this. You know, it's also bad for loading speeds and so on. And this is, can't remember exactly. Probably the title of the video was something like "Why Sliders Suck" or something like that, yeah. Right?
Man, I was just gonna say, I actually remember that video, right. And it was so hilarious because, like, there's you talking, and then you're like mid sentence, and it, like, the slider happens. You go out of screen, yeah. You're like, ah.
We emulated a slider in the video to demonstrate why it's a dumb idea. Basically,
it was brilliant because I still remember it.
And it also, but it also made a lot of people mad, right? A lot of people were mad about the fact that we don't have a slider feature in Thrive Themes. But that is, you know, we took that position as like, here why sliders are dumb. Here's why everybody else is wrong. And some people are mad about it. And that's fine. And that became popular content, right? So the contrarian position is also, again, because you're talking about something that people care about. People care about sliders. In this case, you have two choices. You can say, we made the best slider ever. Here you go.
Right.
And people would love it. Or you go, sliders suck. Buy my thing instead. And people love and hate it, right? And both of those are good, basically. Yeah. I mean, and that's also how niche marketing works, right? I'm not trying to appeal to everyone. I'm trying to appeal to a niche within that that market. But anyway, that's an example of being a contrarian, right? And it means that you have an awareness of what is going on in your market. What do people generally talk about? And look, I think it's, for me, the contrarian position is easy because there's usually a lot of mainstream narrative. I mean, the most popular stuff in any market is always the most attention-grabbing, simplest, most engaging stuff. It's not the truest stuff. And so it's usually easy to say, okay, well, here's why this is nonsense, right?
Right.
Okay, that's one of the ways in which you position yourself. The other way you can position yourself is aligned instead of contrarian, where you're like a fan. So, for example, Andrew Huberman, massively popular at the moment for good reason. And here it's easy to align yourself. I mean, you could also be a contrarian and be like, here's why Andrew Huberman is wrong about X. And that definitely gets attention.
Right.
But you can also do, and you see a lot of people succeeding with that in many different niches at the moment, where basically people go, you know, I tried Andrew Huberman's morning routine for 30 days. Here's what happened. Or I, you know, changed my training routine based on Andrew Huberman's recommendations. Or I did Andrew Huberman's testosterone optimizing protocol or whatever, right? Because he's talked about so many things that actually, you know, people who talk about productivity can borrow from that. People who talk about health, people who talk about fitness, longevity, all kinds of, he's covered so many topics that there's actually many people in many different niches who can like borrow and align themselves with the popularity that Andrew Huberman has. And that's an easy way, again, to be aware of what's going on in my niche. Well, here's one of the big voices in my niche. And how do I make content about that? Because that's the first rule, is make content about stuff people already care about.
Right.
And there's other things you can do along the same, you know, you can do like thing, but with a twist. That's another way to position yourself in the market. But without getting dragged into too many options here, I think if you just think about those two, contrarian or aligned, immediately, the way this basically works is you look at what is going on, what is popular in your niche, and that immediately gives you now a list of content pieces to make, where all the things that are most relevant to what you want to talk about and all the things that are most popular and most trending at the moment, you now have the task to either create your version of that content, which is either contrarian or aligned, right? So right away, basically, that's one of the ways to kickstart a new channel or a new brand, is you go through all the hot topics, you go through all the basics, all the most important things. And that's also, you know, you can look at what is on competing and similar channels, what has gotten the most views. And those are the things that you are going to make content on with whichever strategic alignment you chose. So right away, that gives you a list of content ideas that you already know people in your market care about.
Yeah, and there seem to be waves and seasons of topics, right? Remember, I think a couple of years ago, everyone was all about testosterone, TRT. Almost every fitness YouTuber had a TRT video for some reason, right?
Yeah, and it never stops, right?
Yeah.
You always have the hot new thing. You always have, these trend waves. And obviously, it's not that you can only talk about stuff that is trending and that is popular, but it needs to be part of your strategy, right? And when you start, you might as well only talk about stuff that's popular and trending to get the ball rolling. And then the more authority you have yourself, the larger your audience grows, the more traction you have, the more you can start to essentially dictate
the trends.
The trends, right?
Yeah, because Andrew Huberman is a great example. Whatever he talks about is now the trend for the next 30 days.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So, okay. And so that's what I mean by having a strategy, right? If you have this strategy, then you aren't just randomly making content. You're very deliberate about how you make content. And what works, I mean, this is something that has consistently worked for us in all the different experiments we've done. So you use this approach, using a strategic approach to decide what content to make. And then you use content recipes, essentially. You follow a certain recipe that works for how you make your content. And the content recipe is basically a structure for content that you already know is going to work. So if we take the, you know, the aligned example, like the I tried something by a well-known person,
right?
That would be a content recipe, right? It's like the I tried X content recipe, essentially. And the way this goes is, okay, the concept is given, right? And you align with something that is popular. And the structure, you basically have a very repeatable structure, which is you, in the intro, you explain the challenge, the experiment. You contrast yourself versus the origin of it. Hmm. And the bigger the contrast, the better. So if it's like, oh, I tried The Rock's fitness routine, but I'm a scrawny nerd. Great. That's contrast, right? Or if it's something like, you know, basically anything that gives you kind of that makes it stand out more. You know, I tried this crazy extended morning routine, even though I'm a super busy parent of 4, 5 kids or whatever, right? anything that creates contrast and context. And then you tell the story where you highlight, so you do your 30-day thing or whatever it is, and you highlight the most emotional moments. That's basically it, right? You tell the moments of the biggest struggle, the moments of doubt, the biggest pain you experienced, but also, and then, you know, hopefully the breakthrough, the insights, the whatever. But really, when you're doing one of these, that's all that matters, is the emotional moments, right? Mm. So on your worst day, you need to be recording content, right? When you hate it, you need to be recording content. When you're in ecstasy, you need to be recording content. Like that's what makes it interesting. So it's really like you set the stage, then you have emotional moment, emotional moment, emotional moment, emotional moment, and then you have the conclusion, and you know, you go, here's what happened, and you have some call to action. So then you tell people what to do next. And that can be anything from watch my other video to subscribe to my list, to join my community, to buy my course, whatever it is, right?
Right.
But that's the structure. And you could do that over and over again. There's a channel called Pygmy. He does nothing else. He just does. And he does like, he has week-long challenges, which is kind of silly because really, you know, I trained like X for a week. What happened? Nothing. Of course nothing happened.
The conclusion is the same.
But it doesn't matter. It's entertaining content. And he just always does these challenges. It's always the same. It's some ridiculous challenge. I did it for 7 days. And here are some emotional moments. And then conclusion, right? Very, very popular. And this works. So, okay. And you can always, and it's much, much better to follow a recipe that you, where you know what you're doing, basically, yeah. That's essentially proven, than to try and reinvent the wheel.
Because you don't want the blinking cursor moment, right?
You're exactly, yeah.
Sitting there, blank document, what do I do?
Exactly. This should never be the case. I mean, literally, I never create content like that. It's never happened to me that I'm sitting there going, oh my God, what should I write? So anyway, if you want, what we're also doing is we're compiling these recipes. So what you can do is you can go to focusonaction.com/recipe to get 3 of these content recipes. We've just broken this down for you to give you an idea of what we mean here and how you can have this structure. And with each of these recipes, you can basically create hundreds of pieces of content instead of, again, instead of being like, oh my God, what should I do, yeah. Right?
Well, like that guy you mentioned, that could be the only recipe
exactly.
You ever have.
You can have your whole brand can be one recipe. So that is focusonaction.com. So focus on action, just one word all written out, focusonaction.com/recipe. You can get the 3 content recipes for free. All right. Now, in the next episode, we're also going to talk a bit more about how to kind of find signal in the noise and how to know that your content ideas will work before you even start creating stuff. But this is a starting point. If you have a strategy for finding content, strategy for making it with the recipes, you're like ahead of 95% of creators, I think, already. So that brings us to the third problem, which is a lack of systematic improvement, right? So we've talked about this. This is part of the strategy problem, where if you don't have a strategy, your content will suck and it will keep sucking for a long time, basically. Now, we've talked about how to have a structure for how you even create content. But even with that, there's more you can do. You can also have a specific strategy for how am I going to improve as quickly as possible. Because in general, the good content does tend to win, except that good means engagement optimized, right? You have to, to some extent, in most cases, you have to play the platform game a little bit. But in general, good content has a better chance of succeeding than bad content. And what you want to do is, so the mistake, I think, that can happen here easily is that you only look at platform metrics to try and figure out how to improve. So you upload a video, you go, okay, it got this many views, this many likes, this many comments. And you try to learn from what gets more or fewer views and comments and stuff. And the problem is that early on, that's just not enough signal, right? Mm. Because, yeah, it might take, like on your first, we've had examples, right, where something blows up within 10 videos or so, which is great. But even then, you know, like 1 of 10 videos blows up, that's still not enough signal. So it's better to have a system where you don't have to make 100 videos before you get enough signal to try and actually discern something from the platform metrics, right? And because again, look, if you just keep doing it consistently, you will improve, but just not very fast. Now, what I recommend to do to improve much, much faster is really three things. One is focus on the essentials. Two is improving one thing at a time. And three is getting feedback. So focusing on the essential, this is super important. If you're already doing this, if you followed the advice so far, you're looking at what is popular in your niche. And the problem is the things that are most salient about what you're looking at are not necessarily essential. So you might see videos by a very popular creator, and what stands out to you might be like, you know, the production quality, super cinematic shots, and so on and so forth. But that's not the most important thing. That's not the essential thing. In other words, the reason this content is successful is not because it's shot on a very expensive camera with great lighting and stuff like that, right? What's much more likely to be the case is that this is a creator who became successful because they make content that is in some way appealing. And as they grew more and more successful, they had more and more money to spend on making their stuff look...
And building their production team.
Exactly, yeah. So that is an important thing to keep in mind. Like, don't be distracted by what's flashy, because that's not necessarily what's essential. So if you look at... one thing you can actually do is you can look for what is the most popular, like, simple, unpolished content in your niche, okay? Because there's usually going to be a bunch of content, again, that the creators that have been around for a while and that by now have, like, whole production teams around them, they'll make, like, the flashiest edits and whatnot, right? But the question is, like, who is making popular content where they're just sitting on a chair talking to the camera, for example? And in most niches, you can find someone like that. And then you can figure out, okay, so how come that's working, right? And so right now on YouTube in the fitness niche, there's a guy called Sam Sulek who is a really good example of this, because he just blew up in popularity like crazy. And his videos are super simple. He does none of the things that you might think you need to do in order to, you know, be a popular YouTuber. He has a very, like, casual, just talking to the camera style. Really, really simple. And that's interesting to study, because then you can look at, well, what's essential? And I think the reason this is so important to notice is because, again, you can easily get distracted by this and you can fall down a rabbit hole of, oh my God, I need fancier editing. I need better cameras. I need, I don't know, special effects, or I need a whole team of people or whatever, right? When really all of that stuff is just a cherry on top. And usually what's essential... basically what to look for is emotional appeal and storytelling, right? And so emotional appeal, so actually storytelling is, I guess, the simple one, right? We are always captivated by well-told stories. So look for that. Are there storytelling albums? How is this person telling a story? And emotional appeal can be outside of that, even in something like what seems like, you know, dry, bland, I don't know, tutorial how-to content. It's more emotionally appealing when the tutorial is about something that feels like an urgent problem that must be solved, and when it's framed like that, right? And so that's one of the ways in which someone making very, very simple content can be super appealing. They're simply managing to get people to go, look, this is a super important problem you need to solve, and here's the solution. That's also emotional appeal, right? So that's kind of what to look for. And also what to look for when you review your own content. So you want to be making content and then reviewing your own content. And there too, try to focus on those essentials of emotional appeal and storytelling and clarity. Because what happens with our own content is that generally there are two things that prevent us from being able to review our own content properly. The first is some form of self-loathing, right? Where people are like, oh, I hate how I look. And if you're new to this, right, it's like, okay, you're used to seeing a mirror image of yourself. And then on video, you see a non-mirrored image and you're like, why is my face so weird? and your voice sounds weird to you if you haven't heard your recorded voice a lot. And you might also, like, a lot of people just have a lot of stuff come up, right? It's like, I hate seeing myself. Ah, I look so awkward. I look so dumb. I look whatever. And that gets in the way of you being able to kind of objectively evaluate your own content and makes you a bad reviewer of your own content. The other thing is that you're like too close to it. You know how the sausage is made and you might be paying attention to this tiny detail. Oh, this little edit here is slightly wrong or whatever, right? Again, a impartial viewer who doesn't know you doesn't notice any of this stuff.
Yeah.
And they're also not obsessed with, you know, you might be like, oh my God, I have a thing on my shirt, you know, that I didn't.
It's mustard.
I have a mustard stain on my shirt. And you're like obsessed with that.
Yeah.
Whereas it's likely that, you know, a viewer who doesn't know who you are, they just come across your content, they probably don't care, they probably don't even notice, unless it's like a massive, I don't know, mustard stain sounds a bit dramatic. But we usually care about, you know, we care about little things that just don't matter because it's me that I'm looking at. And I think it is possible to make a mental move where you almost like you look at your content as if it wasn't yours. You look at your content as if it was someone else's, without this exaggerated like self-loathing, where you go, "Oh my God, this sucks so bad," but also without being blind to something like, "Oh, I guess here this part is a little bit boring, or this here the pacing is a bit off, or here I could have told that story a bit better," right?
Yeah, I was just gonna add like, we can critique our own content the same way we do other people's, right?
Yeah.
Like when I'm watching someone else's video, I'm not thinking, oh, this guy's hair is not done today. You know, like I don't care about his hair. But as soon as he goes off on a tangent, I'm like, this guy's boring me. I'm switching tab.
There you go.
Right? And thanks to Alex Hormozi, I particularly pay attention to those moments where I hit pause and go to whatever else. I'm like, this guy just lost me. Why? What happened here? Right? Yeah, exactly. I just wanted to add that in there as another way.
No, exactly. I mean, and that's exactly what I'm trying to get at, right? It's like, look at your own content as if it was someone else's.
Yeah.
And you can do that. It takes a bit of practice, but you can do that. And exactly what you said, I think, is really good. Basically, look for what is the most boring part, what is the most interesting part.
I had this experience repeatedly, especially in videos that I particularly really liked. And I'd be watching and be like, oh man, when am I going to get to the good part? Yeah. And I'm like, wait. That means no one's going to wait for the quote-unquote good part, right?
Should have opened with the good part.
Exactly. You got to get rid of like the 45 seconds of bullshit so I can start with the good part.
Yeah, which also, by the way, is right away, this is such a good content creation, like script writing, also copywriting technique, is like write your draft and then just delete everything, like find the most interesting part and delete everything that comes before it.
Yeah.
That's such a good way to clean up a script, yeah.
Yeah, great point. It's like, don't all great scenes start with the highest point of drama or highest tension point of drama or something like that?
I mean, that's definitely something you see a lot with, if you look at how movies open and stuff like that, right? You often see there's often, or also the episodes of a show, it will usually start on a high point of drama and then it will create context instead of like, here's half an hour of context, now the action scene, right?
Man, if you want an excellent example of this, tangentially related, Chris Voss's book, Never Split the Difference. He's a former FBI negotiator. Every chapter starts with like nail-biting tension. You're like, oh my God.
Yeah.
It's brilliant.
Yeah, that's good. That's really good. Okay, so that is what you can do with self-review. And then, okay, what do you do? What the conclusion you draw from the self-review is you choose one thing to improve each time. And again, it needs to be an essential thing, right? So initially, it's not, oh, I want to have whatever, better lighting or something like that. It doesn't matter. What matters is things like, how do I improve my hooks, right? So the first 10 to 30 seconds, how do I make that more interesting? Also, like your, let's say, on-camera charisma, right? Am I making eye contact with the lens? Am I speaking like a human being speaking to another human being? Or am I speaking like a weird robot because I'm in front of a camera? Which happens to a lot of people, unfortunately. Mm. And then, you know, better storytelling. Can I bring more like emotional moments into this? Can I, instead of, this is something that I'm always having to work on, like instead of talking about things in the abstract in a dry way, can I tell a personal story of here's what happened to me and here's the lesson I learned, instead of just the abstract, here's a lesson that is interesting, right?
Right.
So, this kind of stuff, but you pick one. You pick one. So you try to, you know, again, through self-review, you look at some videos and you go, okay, what is one thing I can practice? And it could be, okay, better hooks. I need to make my first 10 to 30 seconds more interesting, more engaging. And then that's the one thing I try to improve on the next 10 videos or so, right? Hmm. And then you, again, you can self-review and be like, how did I do? Okay, now what's the next weakest point, essentially? Okay, the next weakest point is after my hook, which is pretty good. I tend to go off on a tangent and trail off. So the next thing I want to improve, I want to get to the point, you know, more concisely, basically, and so on. And step by step, if you make this part of your system, you're always working on one thing to improve, you will improve the overall quality of your content much, much faster than if you don't have a deliberate system for it in place.
For improvement, yeah. And it might feel like it's so much slower, right? As opposed to writing the 50 things, everything is wrong.
Yeah.
But you're just like demoralizing yourself. Like, oh my God, I'm worthless.
Yeah, 100%. Like improving one thing at a time is ultimately much, much faster than trying to improve everything at once, ironically. Mm. Yeah. Okay, the final thing is to get feedback. And this is tricky because it's super valuable to get feedback, but most people suck at giving feedback, okay? Most people, so the problem is if you kind of ask your friends or something, hey, you know, what do you think of my latest video? Generally, they will say something like, yeah, I thought it was pretty good, right? Yeah. Or it was great, you're so awesome, I would never do this, something like that. Where they're like, it can be a mixture of genuine admiration because they, you know, you're doing something they're scared of.
Yeah.
But also not wanting to hurt your feelings. And unfortunately, that's the social context we're usually in, is like you try to preserve each other's, you know, goodwill.
Yeah.
And to give good feedback, you have to be able to say, okay, this part really sucks, and this is where you lost me, this is boring, right? Like, I need to be able to tell you something like that.
Also, they might not even be aware of that. That's something they need to be looking out for, right?
Exactly.
For them, they're just like, oh yeah, Shane's talking on camera, and then, oh, okay, groceries, I had to get broccoli as well. Oh, the video's done, Shane, that was amazing.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, exactly. So it is a skill, right? Giving feedback, being able to review something and giving useful feedback is a skill that most people don't have. So what I recommend is that you find someone who can give you actually valuable feedback. And one way to do that is to have some kind of an accountability buddy or something. So it's like, if you're creating content and I'm creating content, we can help each other improve. And we basically have that deal. Like once a week, we get on a call, we review, you know, each other's content and give each other some constructive feedback. That is, if you find someone who can do this and who can do this well, this will like 10x the speed of your improvement. It's so, so valuable to get external feedback. And like I said, it's tricky to do. You can't just randomly ask a person. Like, it might take time to find someone who you can really do this with, but it's well worth the investment, right? It's like, if it takes you a lot of time to find someone and establish a weekly call or something like that to do this, it's worth it, right? It's worth the effort, really. I highly recommend that if you're serious about creating content, like this is such a shortcut just get feedback, right? Okay, so that is basically a summary. Like I said, it's basically that the three biggest obstacles that keep people from succeeding at this. Obstacle number one was discussed in the past episode. And then here we talked about these two elements of strategy, like the strategy of how do you even make your content and the strategy of how do you deliberately and rapidly improve your content. This is the blueprint we've basically been using.
Yeah.
And like we said in the beginning, it's like we've been dabbling in all kinds of different niches. And we have proven over and over again, this same system works. And we literally did it from scratch every time. Like, we didn't carry over any audience, right? We were like just in a brand new niche where nobody knew us. We're doing this over and over again. So, and an important note on this as well is that all of this content creation we've been doing is always a side gig. So even I'm not a full-time content creator. So even when I'm creating content for multiple channels, which I've often done, it is part-time for me. And it is something between like 30 and 50% of my time is used on making content for 2 to 3 different brands. And I think that's important to mention because that's also, in my opinion, if it is taking you your, you know, full time to make content for one brand, you're doing it wrong. And now you might be saying, oh, but what about successful content creators, right? And surely that's what they do. No. That's not what they do. They spend some portion of their time building the back end of their business, because all these successful creators have, you know, their own whatever, their own clothing brands or online communities or shoes, courses, yeah, or shoes or merch or and sponsorship deals and all this kind of stuff. So even a full-time creator, quote unquote, is not spending all of their time on content creation. I literally think that if you're spending all of your time on content creation, you're doing it wrong. Your system must be very inefficient, right?
Yeah.
The only exception is if you're like James Cameron and you're like, yeah, takes me 10 years to make a movie and then we make billions of dollars. I'm like, sure, I'm not interfering with your process there. But it's like, if you're a YouTuber, it should not take you, it's not a full-time activity to make content for one channel.
Right.
And again, like this is how we do it. In the next episode, we are going to talk more about how to find better content ideas and test content ideas before you start creating. And in the meantime, go to focusonaction.com/recipe to get the 3 proven content recipes that you can start using right now to make better content faster. Like, this is really one of the easiest ways to actually shorten the time it takes as well.
Yeah.
Because you're just like, content idea plus recipe, you write an outline, you start recording. And I mean, this is one of the reasons I can do it so fast, actually, is because I always rely on a system, essentially, right?
Yeah, and how to get off the hamster wheel of content creation, right?
Exactly.
And make it efficient, make it fast and impactful.
Yeah, yeah. So again, that's focusonaction.com/recipe to get those content recipes. We are brewing up more of them, but you'll get 3 of them for free right away. So next up, we'd also be interested in your comments and questions about this. So it's been interesting to get a lot of feedback on people's content creation process and problems. So we're interested in, like, right now, what is stopping you from consistently making content that's growing your brand? And I'd be really interested to hear, like, you know, what are your obstacles? What are your questions about this? And be happy to make some more content about this as well. In the meantime, again, focusonaction.com/recipe to get the free content recipes. And we'll put the link to part 1 in the show notes. And also we'll put the link to the next part, which is going to be about content creation as well. So make sure you check out all of those. Leave a comment, leave a like, do all the other stuff. And I'll see you next time.